This is episode number 6 with Tanya McKiernan. Welcome to the Rise Higher podcast. I'm your host, Stephanie Kwong, and each week I'll bring you an inspiring guest with an empowering message to help you rise higher and live your best life. Each guest shares their time of struggle and setback and what specific mindsets, tools, practices, or habits they use to overcome so that you can apply them to your life. This show is to remind you that you're not alone and that there's always a pathway up. Thanks for spending some time with me today. I'm grateful to be on this journey with you. Our struggles are a call for us to rise. So here we go. Let's dive deep now so we can rise higher together. Welcome back to the Rise Higher podcast. Today, I'm so excited to have my dear friend, Tanya McKiernan, who is a total badass. Just like the phoenix who rose up from the ashes, she did that too. And her secret magical power for doing that was through self-love, which I am all about. Now, in addition to being a badass, Tanya is a prolific director who's been working in the entertainment industry for over 20 years. She started directing in 1996 on the syndicated TV show Renegade, which she co-directed with her father, writer-producer Stephen J. Cannell. And in 2002, Tanya was hired to direct multiple episodes of the critically acclaimed show NYPD Blue. And this was followed by directing assignments on high-profile shows like ER, Bones, Monk, Royal Pains, The Mentalist, Grimm, Devious Maids, Criminal Minds, Blindspot, and Supergirl. Tanya has most recently been working on developing her own shows and just got greenlit for one that will rock your world. She's also a wife and mother of 3 kids and a mama to a dog and a cat. Now, in this episode, we drop deep, and Tanya shares a lot of the challenges and traumas of her past and what she did to rise higher. Now, some of the things we cover are the importance of asking for and receiving support, overcoming trauma and how to heal our past, how to support yourself when you're going through a tough time, how to break our fear patterns, busting the cycle of being a victim and stepping into your power. We also talk about letting down our masks to create authentic connections that we all desire, how to stop suffering in silence, what's blocking you from getting what you want, her go-to practice to get out when she's in a dark place, and the key to deeply healing and returning back to our authenticity through the power of self-love. Plus, of course, so much more. I love being a catalyst for others to love themselves and to really understand what that means and how to actually do it. Because I know that when we have a loving relationship with ourselves, we contribute that love to the world, and that is what will heal our world. Now, I created a 40-day self-love transformation that's a step-by-step proven process to release negative self-talk and beliefs and replace them with love that's impacted thousands around the world so far. And it's one of the things that Tanya talks about in today's episode that radically shifted her out of the dark and into the light. And I'm doing something I've never done before, and that is giving a very special discounted offer for that self-love program for the listeners of this episode. I'll share all the details with you at the end of the episode and how to get that discount, so stay tuned for that. Now, I hope you enjoy this episode, and for everything that we mention in today's episode and for the links to connect with Tanya, you can check back in the show notes, and that is over at stephaniekwong.com/EP6. All right, all right. Are you ready? Here we go.
Tanya.
What?
I love you so much.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show. I'm so grateful that you decided to be on the Rise Higher podcast.
Yay.
To share your story, because you have been a beautiful inspiration for me. I've been so grateful to be a part of your journey so far. And what's the joke, that I'm an adopted Cannell sister?
Yes, you are.
I'm in.
Like, Chelsea and I found you. Chelsea, mm-hmm. my sister, yes. found you. And we're both like, oh, we want more Stephanie.
Because I want more of you guys.
I know.
Yeah. I think I chose to have you guys adopt me. I don't think it was your own choice.
Hey, the more the merrier. We're all good with it.
Yeah.
So.
I know that when we met, it was, what, earlier this year? But it feels like it's been forever.
It was early. Well, it was after we all joined the New Hollywood.
Yeah.
Chelsea and I both saw your offer to do the coaching.
Yeah.
And we both talked about it. And then I looked you up on your website and I found the 40 days of self-love transformation, which I told you I was going to bring up. But, and after that, it just, I think I came to come see you. And then, I think I see you more than Chelsea does, but yeah. We just clicked.
Yeah. Something that I've, wanted to bring up for this particular episode, because it's something that I know has been a profound transformation for you, is, you know, 7 years ago, you mm-hmm. experienced tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my dad died.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't necessarily just my dad dying. It was he died of melanoma.
Mm-hmm.
So he got diagnosed over Easter holiday. Mm-hmm. And so it triggered this whole big, huge thing, because I had an older brother that died at Easter when I was 13 years old. So it was really weird how I found out. I was working on a show and I had to fly back to Toronto. So my dad had flown me home for the holiday because I couldn't afford it because it was too expensive. And then he had gotten the news that his cancer had metastasized.
Oh.
And so he told me Easter Sunday, and oddly enough, a good friend of ours, Mike Jensen, who is an oncologist researcher and is actually doing some amazing stuff with cancer, he was at our house, and he ended up walking me through the canyon, and I was like crying. Wow. And it completely triggered that old part of myself from 13, because I got on the plane to fly home and I was sitting next to the window seat. And I started crying, and that's what happened to me when my brother died. I found out I was in Europe, and my parents called me, and then I was on a school trip in Europe. My mother and father called me, and I ended up getting ripped out of the trip and put on a plane and flown home. So it was like it was so similar that it was insane.
Yeah.
You know, so it just opened up a whole part of me that I think I had completely, you know, kind of drowned out.
Yeah.
So it led to about 7 years of just trying to survive. And I went into big depression that I think only my family knew until I met you. And until I started doing the 40 days of self-love transformation, it's like completely changed my life. And it's like I would walk around and getting through every day was horrible. And I was directing, you know, 8 to 9 episodes a year.
Mm-hmm.
So now I've gotten to this place where my life is completely changing. And it's amazing.
When I look back on my life and I have moments of times when I am held back, or I drop into feeling moments of depression too for myself, and I look at my past, and there are things that have recently come up that I've been realizing that happened in my childhood where I was like, wow, I guess my subconscious had stuffed that away. But I never, when people would ask me, how was your childhood? Those things never came up. And I was always thinking, well, it was fine. And I still felt this pain and sometimes the difficulty of moving forward. And then I know so much about your past and what you've gone through. Like, you've had trauma after trauma after mm-hmm. trauma. And yet you keep rising from the ashes. And you keep plugging forward and being an inspiration to the people around you.
And it's funny too, because I always struggle with the fact that I came from a very wealthy family. And then my father did really well in the entertainment industry and sort of was very famous and changed everything. So then I would sit here and go, well, what am I complaining about? Like, here I am, you know, saying that all this stuff happened to me and whatever, but there's part of me that's going, well, you don't have it that bad.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the healing process is to realize that it was pretty bad. what I went through. And the only way to go through it for me was to just completely stuff it down and just keep moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, you even had to do that. You touched on it earlier because you're saying my brother died. And just to clarify for the people listening, you were what, 13 years old when you're
older? He was my older brother. Yeah. He was 15 and a half.
Okay.
My parents, he was with my mother's best friend. And he was digging a hole in a sand dune in Carmel. And I don't know how he did it, but he dug the hole this way instead of this way. And he was inside it. And he had shored it up enough.
Wow.
But then it collapsed on him. And my mom's friend was not with him. She was like on the other side of the sand dune. Her younger son, who was my age, was with him. And he went to go get his mother. And they came in. I guess they dug for about a half an hour. And he was DOA at the hospital. Wow. And my parents weren't with him. I was in Europe on this school trip. My sister was born, but my younger brother wasn't born yet. And it was devastating, you know, but I think I got my coping mechanism from my dad because my dad continued to work. And actually it was at that time when his career was at its height and he couldn't stop. Mm-hmm. And so he just sort of poured himself into his work, mm-hmm. you know, and I think that's kind of what I did. But I think when it gets so bad that you feel like dying mm-hmm. because it's not worth going through every day. And it's funny, too, because it's like if you don't understand, if you haven't gone through depression and you don't understand it, you'd say, well, that's ridiculous. Why?
Snap out of it
or whatever. And sometimes it's not about wanting to die. It's about escaping the pain that you're in. Sometimes mm-hmm. just stillness and escape seems like a good enough reason to leave. Not that maybe you necessarily want to leave. And there were times where, you know, especially when I was, because I have to travel a lot being an episodic director, especially when I was out of state and I was by myself and around Easter, you know, there were times where I got extremely suicidal and nobody knew because I never told anybody.
What held you back from telling people?
I think the guilt of it and not understanding it I always acted like I was fine. Like after my brother died, I always acted like I was fine. I'm fine. I'm fine. I don't need to talk to a therapist. I'm fine. I'm fine. You know, my family's just like falling apart around me and I'm like, no, I'm good. I'm great. But I wasn't. And then I would spend all this time in my room by myself, you know, just, I can't even describe what the feeling is, but it's just this feeling of like, you can't even get through every sec. I mean, each second is so hard to get through. You know, and I had animals. So I remember snuggling my animals on, you know, my animals really, I think, got me through that time because mm-hmm. you get a lot of love from your animals. It's unconditional. You know, after my brother died, my mom went in the hospital. You know, my dad didn't know what to do. It was crazy.
So tragic. And you had to basically take care of Chelsea too, right?
Well, yeah, I kind of became Chelsea's mom.
Yeah.
And then when
at 13,
you know, and I didn't have a place anymore. You know, my parents, my dad admitted it once, I think, but I basically said, I felt like I was a bad reminder of their old life, you know, because I was the only other, because Chelsea and Cody, my brother and sister, were kind of the newness in the family. And so Chelsea, even being born when my older brother died, there weren't a lot of memories with her or whatever. So they mm-hmm. kind of became the new family. And then I felt like a step in my own family, mm-hmm. you know, where I didn't feel like, and my parents love me, but it just was like, I'm a bad reminder of my older brother.
It's so hard because it's almost like the association of a time when something's there and you just start to say, well, I relate that to this. And then I don't want it because it's the reminder. Did you feel that energy when you were a kid too? Almost a little bit of a...
My father did that I'm fine thing. Yeah. And so he was very big on appearance. I mean, his mom, my grandmother was that way. It's almost like a social thing, you know, that you just don't let people into your family and into, you know, you put up a nice front.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when my grandmother...
I feel like most people are like that, though.
Well, yeah. And yeah. it's one of those... Like, I remember when my grandmother, the day before she died, she was waiting for me to come up and see her. And when I got there, she wasn't having a good day. And my sister and I went up to go see her. And she's like, dear, why don't you guys go have, you know, lunch? Because she didn't want us to see her like that. And subsequently, she ended up dying by herself in a hospital mm-hmm. with none of her family around her because she didn't have the ability to let anybody really get to know her mm-hmm. or know who she was or the kind of trials that she had. And I think it's such a sad life. Like I never want to, when I go, I want my family around me. I want, you know, it to be like almost a happy thing, not a bad thing,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I just think it's so sad when, I mean, my dad was like that when he was sick. He told us, but then we weren't supposed to tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my sister and I sitting at the hospital because we thought he was going to die, and I quit a job, which he got really pissed at me for. And we finally told everybody. And the reaction that came back, because he was doing it because, A, he didn't want it sort of... acknowledge the fact that he was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And B, he just didn't think that people wanted to hear that. And he thought that if like people in the industry knew that he was sick and he beat it, that he'd never be able to, you know, be a success again, which mm-hmm. is like,
yeah.
you know, you can't like, I don't understand that way of thinking. So he didn't let all those people that wanted to support him and wanted to love him around him.
Did you, because it sounds like when you were younger, you saw the modeling after your father of tragedy stuff, go focus on work, right? Did you see that in this time too, now when your dad was passing, because you mentioned something about you kind of just stuff it down and you didn't really share, but that, like, what had things changed where now you're seeing how your dad is being, that you picked up some of his habits on how to deal with, say, stress or trauma or...
I think I always knew that he was... I mean, everybody loved my father. It's not that. I mean, if you talk to anybody in the industry, they loved him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what... he put out there was this idea that nothing was ever wrong. And there was a lot of stuff wrong. And he didn't share it for fear of people judging him. And I think the difference between me and him is I'm a sharer, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It all comes from insecurity. It all comes from however he grew up. I mean, he failed through school. He was dyslexic. He always used to say, you know, I'm not scared of failing because I failed the whole time growing up mm-hmm. through school. So failing wasn't an issue for him, but it's also kind of sad that he didn't, I mean, people were really upset with him that he didn't tell them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they couldn't even kind of express it to him. They expressed it to me because at one point because so many people rushed the hospital that literally I had to stand at the door and tell like,
wow.
Big studio heads and all this stuff, like, I'm sorry, you can't come in. And they're like, what? And I'm like, no, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
He's too tired. He can't come in. But like people that he had helped or shared in their time of need, he never allowed them to do that for him.
So we've talked a lot about this, right? About pushing love out mm-hmm. versus letting it in.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see could have been the value for people who do let that support in? Like, you've been doing it more and more, obviously. Like,
yeah.
you ask for it, you get it. And that's the difference between your dad and you. What's the value of saying, hey, let people in?
Well, I think it's the scariest thing to do, to sit there and make yourself vulnerable. Because really, you're opening yourself up
yeah.
to people's cruelty, you know? And so it makes sense to me why anybody would say, I want to put this image out there. But what I've discovered, especially within, what, we've known each other for 6 months now or something, mm-hmm. what I've learned in the 6 to 8 months is that the more vulnerable I become, the more support that I get and the more stuff that I've always wanted I get. Mm-hmm. And I never got that. Like, I never understood. And it still tweaks me out. I mean, I did it, you know, every day, because I will go through every day and, you know, I'll joke around with people and have a good time and I'll get in the car. And as soon as I get in the car on the drive home, I'm thinking, I shouldn't have said that. Oh my God, they hate me. Oh God. You know, and
all the mental
torture of critic. I'm not going to be accepted. Yeah. And that, because growing up, I was like, I was not the popular kid in school. I was that kid that they make movies about. I'm that kid, like in Lucas, that everybody tortured and you know, attacked and abused. And, you know, so I would have to just keep, I mean, what do? You just have to move forward. So if you're that person and you have been, you know, treated in such a way, which I think I brought on myself because of how I was being, because I would get attacked. And I would act like, it didn't bother me, you know?
So you think, you said you're being attacked for your way of being. Was it then you not caring invited more of it in, or?
I think a little bit. I mean, I did. I mean, the instance I'm talking about is first of all, I was a year older than everybody else. So it was in fifth grade when I got my chest and nobody else had it. And so the girls immediately, and girls in high school, you know, I always say they're testing their knives. You know, they figure out, they're young, they don't know how to be kind to each other, but they've got this set of knives that they can like literally cut anybody with. Mm. And so what they do is they team up against each other. I've seen it happen with my girls. I've seen it, you know, but it's not that they're children. And so they've got this whole set of tools that they don't know how to use. And so they try them on each other. And they can be really brutal. That's why you hear about, you know, all this social media bullying and all this kind of stuff. It's these tools, these mental tools that I think girls have especially that they use against each other. But if you cut to 25 years old, they'd be horrified at what they did. But they're just children, right? Mm-hmm. So I had developed and... the girls started chasing me around the field and I remember feeling like, oh, I'm fast. They can't catch me, whatever. Well, they caught me and it was maybe about 10 girls. And once they caught me, it was like, they started giving me titty twisters and sticking their fingers at my butt. And it was like one of those things where it was like, I would protect my chest and then they'd go for my ass and then vice versa. And I couldn't, you know, so I was violated at school. And, you know, there were no teachers there and I didn't report it. My best friend who couldn't do anything for me, you know, I remember her, you know, going, let's go to a teacher. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm fine.
How did you, so then, because now I know you say that you're more vulnerable, you are sharing, I'm guessing, as a kid.
But the difference is that now if you came after me, I would fight you. At that time, I wouldn't. That time, I had no ability to protect myself because of the way I was raised. Mm-hmm. So it was like I just kept inviting this abuse and there was no line. Like there was no, you know, way of getting anybody in trouble. Mm-hmm. So then it became this thing of constantly feeling like I just had to take whatever came my way. Mm-hmm. And then that led to sexual abuse and, you know, all this stuff that I just had to endure.
Yeah.
You know, and then what do you do? It's like I have to keep living, right? So I just have to figure out how to get through my day or disassociate from it or whatever I needed to do to get away from it.
Yeah. In that process of time, did you, because I'm sure, I'm going to guess, you were searching for different things, like what can I do to actually just even feel better in the moment, right? And now you're in such a great space. But even during that time of growing up and then even, with your father's tragedy, all this stuff that kept stacking, what did you find that was in there that really supported you in coping, like healthy coping? Did you? No.
No. Okay. No. There was, you know... There was shoving it into a hole. I shove so much stuff into a hole that starting 7 years ago, it's just been 7 years of, and I think too, going through therapy and stuff, just realizing, like I just realized something 2 days ago that I didn't understand. It's almost like, it's even like being raped. You know, you process it in a different way. Like my first time was that. And I always thought that, well, that's what your first time is supposed to be. Mm. And that's just what it's supposed to be. And that's how I got through it, because I just went, oh, well, everybody has to deal with this. So I, you know, okay.
If you were to parent your child now, you, like younger you, mm-hmm. in those different points of time of challenge and being bullied by those girls or the rape and other things, like how would you support your younger self to move through those times, knowing what you know now?
I think I would support her just like I support my girls. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I had a really great conversation with my youngest daughter today. And part of the reason why it was so great was because I was able to open up in a way that's not like, I'm not trying to get sympathy for what I'm saying now. It's like, this is what happened and this is what I learned. And so like with my daughter, I was able to take some responsibility for stuff that was my part in her growing up. Mm-hmm. That's allowed her to be vulnerable with me. And then it allowed me to show her how being vulnerable is actually good, that some of the stuff that she's going through, you know, being 15 and all this stuff, she can actually have control over. I mean, I think the thing that I learned is that I have a choice. Mm-hmm. I have a choice to be sad and depressed, or I have a choice to be happy. And mm-hmm. I choose to be happy, but I never really understood that I had a choice, mm-hmm. because growing up for me was all about not having a choice. Mm-hmm. Was all about, okay, if it's coming my way,
deal with
how
it.
How do I get through it? Yeah. How do I get, and my generation was deal with it. My generation was just, you know, my generation, you know, spanking was appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And it's not anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, people are just, you know, but when you go through that as a child, you're basically, my power was taken away from me. Not that it was necessarily my parents' fault, because that's what everybody was doing.
How do you see, because there might be people who have bit that generation, right? I know I was, and mm-hmm. just being openly and sharing, and because I do not blame my parents for this at all, but a few years ago, through doing this exercise, I was on a ropes course. I ended up jumping. I missed this ring that I wanted to get, and I was so pissed off, and one of the coaches asked me, because I was starting to cry, but I said that I had pulled my hamstring, so that's why I was crying, and I think she could see right through it. And she then asked me, when my leg was fine, she goes, how did it feel to not get that ring? I started bawling. And I said, she goes, well, what happened to you when you didn't get what you're supposed to get? Mm-hmm. And we know what happens, right, yeah. with that. And so then we start to realize, like, and then she basically said, you were physically abused. And I was like, no, I wasn't. She's like, yes, you were. I'm like, no, I wasn't. And at our time, that was what was acceptable. So it didn't seem that way. But as a child, now when you look back, like, even if a parent, you know, loses it for a moment and hits her kid for a second, their kid could interpret that in a way that's really unhealthy for them. So, and if it's consistent, it gets even...
Well, and for me, like, the thing that I realized was that when my parents would spank us, my brother always went first. So this feeling that I have all the time that I'm waiting for the thing to come to hit mm-hmm. me upside the head, that's what it is, because that's what I always did. I just realized that on Friday. And I bawled in my therapist's office because I was just like, you know, it made sense. But then mm-hmm. I was able to release all that because that's my fear. It's like there was one time when my dad was going to spank me, and I didn't remember this, but I just did, which was I could hear my brother being spanked. So I was in my room waiting for my dad to come spank me. And I tried to find every hiding place I could possibly find. I went up in my closet and hid up on the top of my closet. Yeah. I tried to hide my bathroom. And I'd sit there for like a minute. And then I'd be like, he's going to be really pissed at me if he can't find me. Like, he's going to be even more mad. So I finally laid down on my bed, pulled down my pants, and just waited for him, you know, to come in. And my therapist was like, well, what do you think your dad was saying? And I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, what is that like for him to have to come in the room and see his, you know, 5-year-old daughter laying on the bed and then you have to hit them?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, but for me, it was like, that's the feeling that I'm always running up against, which I never knew what it was. I couldn't figure out why I was always going there. And now that I've figured it out, I'm like, oh.
Yeah. So much of, you know, we've talked so much about this, but so much of our current isms that we have, right, our fears or our behaviors or the things that we do are so shaped by our childhood. And knowing what you know now, and I would love for you to start like just even sharing all the wisdom that you have, but like how do you break through that? Like, how do you stop that? When the moments when you notice it's old stuff, right, the old fears coming up, what do you do to reroute yourself?
Well, I think for me, because I think I do have a little bit of PTSD from everything I've gone through, that there's times where it's just like, it's like a wave. It hits me and I can't, I don't even have a second to think, hey, stop. I'm in it. So it's like, as you say, riding the wave and getting through to the other side, and then really thinking about or trying to, because I think for me, it's always been why, like, why did that happen to me? Why did, you know, why did those girls chase me around on the field? You know, and I think coming up with the why and also realizing that at the time I was actually contributing to that just because of how I chose to get through my life. And then therefore, if I can forgive myself for the responsibility of that, then I can free myself from the whole thing, because we're not perfect. And like, that's one of the things I said to my daughter this morning. I'm like, I'm not a perfect mother. There's been plenty of stuff that I have done that I am really upset at myself for. But at the time that I was doing those things, I couldn't see through to doing the right thing, you know? And for my daughter, I think, or from what I saw, and when she sees it, she'd go, Mom, why did you have to talk about me? But
she loves you.
I know.
A lot.
But what I see from her, just me sharing that, is that she got healed. So it's worth it for me to say to her, hey, look, I'm really sorry. I mean, my other daughter caught me cutting one time, and I had this memory, and every time I would bring it up, people would get like really weird about it. But I'm like, when I was little, I found a hammer in my dad's workroom and I had it hidden underneath my dresser in my room, and I would try and break my ankle with it. And I don't know why I did it. I think partially it was because I felt like I wasn't getting any attention, or that they loved my brother better than me. And so I didn't know what I was doing, but then when my dad passed away, it went into cutting, that same impulse. And for me, it's like, it was a way of hating myself. And for all those things that I blame myself for doing for my whole life, for the rapes, for the everything, I always blame myself that actually cutting myself, I couldn't feel it, you know, but I would just hack at myself, and I'm like, well, I don't.
What was the turnaround for you? Because
I think my daughter catching me, and knowing that that's not the right thing to do. But now but it was almost like a little window had gotten opened, and it was like, I started doing it and it got worse and it got worse, like anything, like if you were going to drink or if you were, you know, so it's a coping mechanism that I used, and it was a way of hating myself. And at the time my dad was dying. And so he would have, when I started cutting, he would have outbursts and he just ripped me a new one.
Yeah.
And So that's when it started.
Yeah.
And then it was like after he died, it kept going. And then I think I probably did it for about 3/4 of a year. Yeah. And then I stopped. But
and how through all that, right? Because Tanya, I swear.
We're going to do like 15 episodes on you. And then people are going to watch this and go, she's a wackadoo.
No, she's an amazing soul who's endured a lot. But the beautiful thing is you've overcome that in such the most powerful way. You are soaring right now. And that's why it's so extraordinary to witness. And again, I wanted you to share like when the turnaround happened for you, right? To say, I'm pulling myself out of this depression. I'm choosing that I want something better for my life. Like, when did that hit you? And then what has been the things that really have supported you in moving through?
Well, I think the thing that stopped me from getting better was this idea of I've always taken care of myself. I've always taken care of myself. Mm-hmm. And I've taken care of my brother and sister. I've taken care of my mother. Mm-hmm. I've taken care of my dad, you know? And so when you say to me, or when people would say to me, like my therapist would say to me, well, you know, you need to take care of yourself. I'm like that. I don't want to take care of myself. Like, that's all I've been doing this whole time, you know? And when I finally told myself, just stop being a baby about it. Like, I am the only one who can fix myself. Nobody Amen. Else can fix me.
Yep.
And I think that's the issue a lot of people have, which is like, we want that support and we want that love and we want it, but we don't want to have to go through what we have to go through to actually get mm-hmm. it. So,
so step one, take responsibility.
Well, yeah. And not like, even like in terms of these rapes and stuff, when I say take responsibility, I'm not taking responsibility for somebody.
No, it's for that you pull yourself out. That's the responsibility.
That, but also taking responsibility for where I was in my life at that time. Like, you know, I needed connection. So I got myself into a position where that happened, mm-hmm. you know? And if you asked the guy, he would say, no, I didn't rape her. Mm-hmm. But it was partially because I couldn't protect myself. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think also too, when you get in this mode of being a victim, which I have been in my own mind, not things that have happened to me, then you just perpetuate the victimness. Mm-hmm. People come after you as a victim. But if you sit there and you say, this happened to me and this is how I grew and I'm a stronger person, that's different than saying I'm a rape victim. And I got to tell you, I just started saying that like the last year and a half. And I find myself saying it more. Like, it's like a little trippy for me to even be saying it now because there's such a connotation to it. But I also feel like if people don't know, I mean, what is it? 1 in 3 women are molested.
Yeah.
So it's like, and I was just telling my daughter this morning, I'm like, I was in France and I was on the subway and I was wearing a short skirt and some guy was reaching up my skirt and touching my privates. And she's like, what? Yeah. And I'm like, yeah. And I didn't, and she's like, well, what did you do? You know, my friends all went around me and she's like, why couldn't I go? I couldn't see him because there were so many people. I didn't know who it was. But that's a violation of my person. And, you know.
So what I love is that you were saying that realizing not being a victim is going to be such a powerful step for you, right? Mm-hmm. Which I've seen you do so elegantly. Like, really. I'm serious. You.
Well, just like you, I'm my biggest critic, so. You know, I'm learning how not to be.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But day by day, what are those things that you, if you could say, this has been what's helpful? And in the moments when it feels challenging or in the moments that I notice I revert back to these
old
patterns.
You ready for the commercial?
Okay. Bring it on. Bring it on.
So doing 40 Days of Self-Love, that has been, I've now done it 5 times. And I have a group of friends, including my sister, that are doing it. And it's like, we all support each other, right?
So good.
I know, but it's difficult. It's like, and it's funny because now that I've done it, I can totally now spot out, like you said, when people are not loving themselves and you sit there and you go, well, somebody not loving themselves. Mm-hmm. But it's like, when I fall back, like I did these last couple of days, I felt horrible. Mm-hmm. And being in a time in my life where all these great things are happening and I've really turned my life around and I can feel the positivity in my life and the support and the people that do love me that I couldn't see it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's going through the last 2 days, my fallback position has always been isolate. And so I texted you, I texted my sister, you know, in our group, I told my husband, it's like, I'm now know even how uncomfortable it feels and that I just want to hide, that I have to do the opposite of what I feel. Because if I go and I say, and it's so funny because in our group, every time I'll say something like, I'll be like day 21, whatever. And then I'll go this is my experience and I'm really open about mm-hmm. how I'm feeling that day. And the response that I get back from everybody is like, even my sister, she's
so
like,
loving and supportive.
I love when you share like this, because to her, I was this person that had it all together. And so then that makes her feel like, you know, what's wrong with her? But I'm perpetuating the same lie mm-hmm. that my parents did mm-hmm. because I learned that growing up that you just suffer in silence. Yeah. And I think if people stop suffering in silence,
yep.
And that's not to say always telling people
everything. There's a difference, I think, between the vulnerability of sharing
yeah.
versus dumping, right? Well, some people want to keep dumping.
Well, putting up on Facebook every 5 seconds. Like, I won't do that. I won't put stuff on social media going, oh, you know, this happened or, you know, whatever. Because I don't believe that I should be putting my stuff out there.
Yeah.
But in terms of my relationships with my friends or that kind of stuff, I want people to be inspired and learn to have a happy life too.
Yeah.
I don't, and I've always been this way, even when my brother died and like everything that happened throughout my life, it's like, I don't ever want to make other people feel bad. So
yep.
it's like, I always felt like if I would tell you stuff, like for instance, when my brother died, you know, 3 days after I got home, the older son of the two sons basically molested me.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, and then the next day later that afternoon, I went to my cousin's house and I went swimming with my aunt and my uncle and my cousins. And I remember thinking, God, this is so great because I was stuck in my room. But it was like when he molested me, it was like I couldn't move because I was so devastated by my brother's death mm-hmm. that I just let him,
yeah,
you know. So it's like one of those things where I just felt like a piece of meat that people just kept
right
but, kept
yeah.
abusing. But it's like, I don't want people to come to me and be like, oh, Tanya, I'm so sick. Cause my response yeah. then is no.
Well, I think it's more of, cause I know you well enough to know it's like that sharing responsibly and sharing vulnerably, because that's the whole point of why I'm doing this too, is people being willing to share, life isn't perfect. I've been through something hard or I'm currently struggling with something. Mm-hmm. So you're not alone. We're all in this together and sharing what we know and what we've learned to really elevate ourselves. And I know a huge thing, as you've already said, and it's been massive for me, is self-love.
Mm-hmm.
Like forgiving yourself, accepting yourself, having compassion, which is one of the hardest things that I had to overcome.
Yeah.
But that is really what's going to have you rise above. Because I know, you know, even as a kid, I think if I was able to practice those things and then growing up in different points and stages of my life, that how instrumental in the way that I feel about myself and about the world and what I mm-hmm. would be capable of is all based on that. And also the ability to heal the past.
And the ability to receive. Like yeah. I could never receive. Receive's really hard for me.
Yeah.
You know, and to be able to, but now I walk around every day and it's like, I got a lovely text from a friend of mine this morning who's a director who is observing on a show. And they were all saying, coming up to her going, oh, Tanya said all these great things about you. Mm-hmm. And she sent me this text this morning going, I thank you so much. And your support means so much to me. And, you know, and I get stuff like that all the time, but I never
let it in.
I never sat there and go, oh my God, here's another,
yep.
I receive that. Like, I say it now all the time. I'm like, receive. And I'll say it to other people. I'm like, please receive. Like, I'll say something and the person will go, no, 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 don't worry about it. And it's like, just receive the compliment.
Yes.
Just
take it.
Just
say
take
thank
it.
You.
And then it's like, okay, thank you. But yeah. I was not a good receiver. I'm a good giver.
You are now a good receiver. Let's change that.
Right? But I'm, yeah. And I'm a good receiver now, but it's what you say. It's like, it's the circle of it. It's like, if you cut one off, then you don't get the other. It's like, you have to give and receive. But I learned that from my dad too. It's like, and my mother, it's like they constantly gave, but they never would receive. Yeah. And so when you don't receive, you don't get, you know?
And it's so interesting because everybody thinks that I don't have what I want because I'm not smart enough, good enough, worthy enough, or whatever, but it's really just them thinking I'm not worthy and they push it away. But everything you want is available for you if you just say, yes, I'll receive it and stop pushing it and know that I'm worth it.
Or it's okay for someone to, if you do something nice for them, you're robbing them of the ability to love you as well as you robbing yourself of receiving the love. You know, it's like to sit there and, you know, and now it's like, I feel like I woke up. Like, I feel like I just, the light went on, you know, and I went through 7 years of just horrible depression, you know, and thinking what, you know, even thinking God hates me. Like, I don't understand why, you know, and it's not that. It's that, is that I didn't love myself enough to go, you know what? And as a kid, I had no control. Like, as a kid, I couldn't do diddly squat because everybody had control over me. But as an adult now, I can say, no.
Yep. I love me.
I love me and don't.
And don't do that.
Don't treat me that way.
Yeah. So self-love has been such a transformer, I know, for you that actually, for everybody who's listening to this episode, I'm going to do a special little discount for them of 50 bucks off. Yeah. In honor of you, Tanya.
How much?
50 bucks.
Oh, wow.
Off of it.
What? 50 what? Bucks off? Wait.
I'll give you 50 bucks off.
That's okay.
So I'll post all that at the end of the episode, but just because I know it's made such a huge difference for you and me and the people it's served so far.
And I think people have to understand though, when they do it, it's not like a pill. You're not just going to take a pill and it's going to be better and whatever. You actually have to work at it. And I found, because I feel like, you know, you go through the 8 modules and the last one is receiving and the first one is acceptance. And I always find when I'm done with receiving, I have to go right back into acceptance because it pulls out all this stuff that I, you know, I have like a great 3 weeks and then I hit the end and I'm like, you know, and then I have to go back into I have to jump back in. And it's like, sometimes I don't want to do it, but it's like, and one of the things I shared in our group was, you know, you guys may think that, you know, I just do it every day and what's wrong with you because I do it every day. But what you don't understand is I'm just holding on to it like a lifeline. Like I'm just holding on to it and doing it every day, even if I don't want to do it because I know that it will make me feel better, but I don't like it all the time. You know, and some days I'll do it and I don't get anything from it because I really wasn't mentally
but I think
in it.
What I've seen you and what was one of the big things that inspires me about you is you are consistent and in your practice, knowing that, again, each day you just show up, you just show up, you just show up instead of quitting. And I think that's how you've gotten
and
to where you are.
And the thing is, I mean, it is true. What good there is in life takes effort. And if you don't make the effort, you're not going to get it. And it's just the way, it's a yin and yang of things, you know? I mean, it's like, it's if it were easy, not everybody would be doing it. We wouldn't even be having this podcast right now.
Yeah.
You know, if it's easy and you can just take a pill.
Yeah.
But, and I think too, women, men need it a lot too, but women really need it because we... A lot of us are just givers and we are homemakers and mothers. And so we tend to put ourselves on the back burner and you don't have to be on the back burner.
You gotta fill your own cup. So you're pouring from a full cup instead of an empty one.
And it's not bad to make yourself, you know, cause also my generation, and I'm sure yours too, is that the woman is supposed to give up their entire lives mm-hmm. for the family. And so then you have a bunch of women that are unhappy and unsatisfied because they can't, you know, they can't do the things they want to do. And if the thing they wanted to do was just stay home and take care of their kid, that's totally fine. I'm not making a judgment in terms of working, not working. But it's more about being fulfilled. It's about doing with your life what you're meant to do with it. And you only get one life.
Mm-hmm. Go for it. So I'm going to ask you three questions. This is the unlock your heart round that I ask mm-hmm. all my guests.
All right.
What's something unique about you that most people don't know?
Most people know it though, because I tell everybody, but I love to paint. I'm a painter.
Mm-hmm.
I love sports.
Mm-hmm.
Not watching them, playing them. See, you did this to me again. I can't think of anything. I guess it's because I'm such an open
book.
You
just did.
What?
You thought of something.
What?
You thought of two things.
Yeah, but you said that most people don't know about you.
Oh.
Oh. See.
Well, most people don't know that you... Well... Or they know that you paint?
Well, because I have it on my phone. I have it on
But you
everything.
Just started that, so...
No, I've been painting since I graduated from college.
Most people don't.
No, I know.
See?
Most people don't.
Yeah.
And... I'm a finger painter is what I am, which sounds really funny because you'd think you'd see a child's thing, but actually...
it's amazing.
I'll give a shout out to Ira Scott because I think she's an amazing artist.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Cool. You knocked that one out of the park, by the way.
Thank you.
when you're in a really dark place, what's your go-to to get out?
40 Days of Self-Love.
Yeah. You guys hear that? 40 Days of Self-Love
I'm working for free stuff. Free stuff. It has been lately. Nothing else I've ever tried has worked. And I love what you say, which is it's a toolbox. It's like you can pick up any one of the practices and it helps you. And it really does.
It does.
And I think gratitude is the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even this last week having a hard time, I still am able to look at all the positive abundance that's coming into my life where before I could never see it.
Yeah. Which is what's bringing more of it into your life.
Yeah.
All right, last question.
Yes.
Knowing what you know now, what is one bit of advice you would give your 10-year-old self?
Don't be scared. Like, you're more powerful than you think you are.
Mm. I love that. Thank you, Tanya.
You're welcome.
Thank you for sharing just your heart and all the beautiful wisdom that you have with us today.
Woohoo!
Love you.
Love you too.
I hope you enjoyed that episode with Tanya. She's a fighter and she's overcome so much. It's been amazing for me to be a part of her journey, to witness her rise. As Tanya shared in this episode, a big part of her transformation to rise above was my 40-day self-love transformation online program. As I mentioned in today's episode, I am gifting all of my listeners $50 off of my 40-day self-love transformation online program that has already impacted thousands around the world. This program works. It is a step-by-step, proven process that can radically transform your relationship with yourself from one of self-doubt and self-beat-up to one of pure love, support, and having everything that you want. Because you know that you're enough and you own your worth. So, to get your gift of $50, head on over to stephaniekwong.com/EP6 and check out the show notes where you can get all the details on how to redeem that. And you'll also find everything we mentioned in today's episode and all the links to connect with Tanya there too. You can also check out all my other podcast episodes there too. Until next time, I'm sending you so much love.